Hello and welcome to the next segment of Buffalo Who Knew, the podcast series which highlights the often underappreciated, sometimes unearthed assets of Buffalo, particularly as it relates to art and culture and the built and natural environments. And I am thrilled to be joined here today by my friend and New York co-resident Rebecca Allen, and of course my compadre here, Newell. Hello, Rebecca.
Hello, Newell, and hello, Fritz. I'm happy to be here.
I have wanted to have this podcast with you since the moment I launched this, so thank you for being in town for this, and let's talk about it. So we're here, we're going to talk today about this incredible character, person, figure in the landscape world, Ellen Biddle Shipman, whom I understand you more often refer to as Ellen Shipman.
Yes.
One of the first women landscape designers in the country,
mm-hmm.
formidable force who developed an authentic and idiosyncratic style. And so let's talk about her a little bit. Who was Ellen Biddle Shipman?
Well, Ellen Shipman is really one of America's foremost garden designers or landscape architects. Sometimes we use those terms interchangeably, as she did. She is an understudied landscape designer in the history of landscape design, but because of the work of Judith Tankard, especially, and people who have studied her work and written about it, it has gained much more appreciation, particularly in the landscape architecture world and the garden world, but now in the wider cultural universe. She was born in the mid-19th century, and she lived until 1950. And her practice was based in New Hampshire and on Beekman Place in New York City. Those were her offices when she was at the height of her practice. She's really known for the gardens that she developed as a primarily self-taught landscape designer, but did have apprenticeships with a leading architect, Charles Platt. She's known for the style that she developed that was associated with the American country house era at the turn of the 19th into the 20th century, and then influenced by the colonial revival movement of art and architecture around that time. But we're here in a way because of her. She has brought so many people together around the extraordinary 600 plus gardens that she designed in the United States. Mm.
And let's just talk about that.
Yeah.
She was a very prominent figure, particularly among society on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
So grand estates in Newport and Long Island and Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
She started to be the landscape designer of record. And
right.
Lo and behold, she's brought to Buffalo. And of
you
course,
bet.
You are a Buffalo native. So let's talk a little bit about how you took an interest in her. Was it your Buffalo origins, or as a landscape designer, or all the above?
You know, Fritz, it's really Lake Erie. I was born in Cleveland, at the other end of Lake Erie. I was a little child in Ashtabula, Ohio, living near the lake. And when I was in fifth grade, we moved to Hamburg. So Lake Erie is really a sort of anchor for me culturally and familially. But Ellen Shipman was in Buffalo in the late 20s and early 30s, working with at least 11 or 12 different clients who lived along the lake or nearby Western New York.
And we're talking about the Knoxes and the Goodyears
and
the Kelloggs and the Shelcoffs. So very prominent. And Darwin Martin.
Absolutely.
So very prominent families in Buffalo. Brought her to Buffalo.
Yep.
that must have been a real source of pride, and you know, for the city to have this major landscape designer coming to town. Of course, Olmsted had been here.
Did they collectively bring her here, or was that something that she came in once she did one? She was sought after to do another one.
Yeah, it's more than what you just said at the end there. I believe that she met Darwin and Isabel Martin through John Larkin, because Larkin was Darwin Martin's boss for a time.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, it was Larkin Soap Company, and Darwin Martin was the executive who ran it, to my understanding. Yeah.
But she came first in 1922 to Chautauqua because Thomas Edison and his wife Minna Miller Edison, brought her in to design a garden of the Edison Miller house at Chautauqua. So that property was the first that Shipman ever designed. Now I have to open the research books again and find out how Thomas and Minna met Ellen, but I bet we could find it. Mm-hmm. And then Newell, to your question, it was then word of mouth. So we think that the Larkins probably introduced Darwin Martin to Ellen Shipman, and that brought her into the circle of Buffalo patrons of the arts and architecture and eventually gardens. And the more you comb through the archives and you look at photographs of who was where, you can understand how, just like today, somebody who makes gardens for a living and is commissioned to create them often does so through the fact that somebody's seen your garden that you designed by somebody else.
And the Martin House just restored their gardens. Was that her original garden that was restored?
We're talking about Gray Cliff on the lake, the summer house.
So it was the summer house. It was Gray Cliff.
That's right, exactly. And Ellen Shipman was brought on board by Isabel and Darwin Martin in 1929, after...
So well after the house had... that the Martin house had been built, and Gray Cliff had been finished in what year?
28.
28, okay.
But that house was designed by Frank Lloyd Wright, as a lot of Western New Yorkers know. And Wright had designed a broad brush landscape plan, but it was never realized. And I think part of it was because Isabel Martin wanted a more intimate and flower rich garden, because she herself was a talented arranger of flowers. So Ellen Shipman was invited, and we see that from Darwin Martin's journals in October of 1929, and you know what happened in October of 1929, was the stock market crash. Yeah. She came just a few days after the crash.
Oh my gosh.
I do think it's important to note here that Rebecca, you've done an enormous amount of research on Shipman and her work in Buffalo, and a lot of this came out of your studies at Cornell, correct?
Well, yeah, I didn't study. I wasn't a student at Cornell. I'm a painter, and I trained. I did at Allegheny College and Kent State University, but Cornell is the site of the Shipman Archive. So once I got rolled into this world of Shipman, I spent a lot of time at the archive in Cornell in Ithaca.
And how did her archives end up at Cornell?
She decided to offer them to Cornell. And also Cornell has a landscape architecture program and houses the archives of many important American landscape architects. So I think she understood the bulk of her archive went there. We're talking about design plans for gardens like the Darwin, the Gray Cliff house, and other Buffalo gardens. She sent a few plans to the Smithsonian, or they ended up in Smithsonian.
Had anyone done a deep dive before on Shipman, or was she relatively obscure?
Judith Tankard is Shipman's main historian and biographer, and so Judith Tankard is really to be credited with resurrecting and telling the story of Ellen Shipman in America. And Judith lives in Massachusetts. Her contribution is primary, and she's influenced a cluster of younger historians and gardeners like me and painters like me to study Ellen and look to her for other ways in which she broke ground in a lot of ways in the field.
And she's written the de facto book on Ellen Biddle, yes, on Ellen Shipman. I've seen it. It's beautiful, and in it, in the back, is indexed the projects that she did. And lo and behold, you've got 11 or 12, as you say, in Western New York. Yeah. So you know, it's really amazing how this comes together. And you and I were talking a little bit before the podcast how. Let's fast forward a little bit, yeah, to your meeting Anna Kaplan, with whom I, you know, helped work on a gallery in Buffalo, and you were one of the artists who, and your work is fantastic. Your fine artwork is beautiful. So you developed a relationship with Anna. Anna moves on to Grey Cliff and becomes executive mm-hmm. director. You have a chance to conversation with her about Ellen Shipman's work at Grey Cliff and right. restoring that. So let's talk about how that all came together.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I grew up about 8 miles from Grey Cliff, so I remember Grey Cliff before the Conservancy was formed, when the Pierist fathers lived in residence there. But I knew that there was some work that the newly formed Conservancy was involved in, doing a cultural landscape report with Heritage Landscapes and Patricia O'Donnell to research the feasibility of revitalizing the Shipman landscape and really elevating Shipman alongside of Frank Lloyd Wright as the co-creator of this. I hate that word, co-create. The collaborative creator of Grey Cliff as a site. Anna and I knew each other because she represented my work in Buffalo, and so it was very kind of a seamless friendship and working relationship that continues to this day. Why else? I mean, as a painter...
And I'm sorry, when you grew up, had you known about Ellen Shipman's work at Grey Cliff? No. So this is after the fact, after you've researched her and saw her at Cornell. And,
oh, yeah.
Okay. And so they embarked on this feasibility study, and lo and behold, they got a grant and were able to move forward with it.
Yep. Over a period of years, the restoration started, and it was really the hard work of a series of horticulturists, Nellie Gardner at first, and then Emma Hahn now, and the members of the Conservancy and support from various foundations.
And for those who haven't been to Grey Cliff,
yes,
the gardens are nothing short of extraordinary. I mean, they are so beautiful.
Absolutely.
What they have done. And so they're true to form. They're,
yes,
they're very much what Ellen had laid out. How yeah. incredible. And in the process of doing that project, you became aware, you were introduced to a couple, Stephen Dietz and Eric Stenslick, who mm-hmm. bought the Bishop's House in the city and on Oakland, and lo and behold, they discovered an Ellen Shipman garden.
Right.
And how do you know how they uncovered that, or how they discovered that?
Well, the garden structure itself, which is a low-walled garden, typical of Shipman's style, enclosed by these low stone classical walls, still existed. And somehow they came across Tankard's book, or someone handed it to them, but they knew that they had something special, and it was no longer planted as it was in the 1930s, but the bones were there. So my clients, Stephen and Eric, have always recognized the value of preservation in Buffalo and of restoring sites like that to, or shepherding them for the next generations. And we met in November 2021, and we started to talk about, let's uncover what was here and find out more about Shipman's footsteps on this property on Oakland Place. And we discovered that the design plan did not exist at Cornell, which was not unusual. Sometimes she just consulted on gardens and went and talked to clients and said, do this, do that. But the house on Oakland Place, which was built for Georgia Foreman, was listed in the client list. So my work for them was to essentially create a garden that was based on the existing architectural bones of the garden and the stonework, and then to compare it to other gardens of the era that Shipman made, even in Buffalo.
And again, she did have a signature style, right? So you, mm-hmm. you would be able to pull from that, that I assume were represented, that style was represented in almost every project she did, mm-hmm. correct?
Absolutely, even mm-hmm. at Greycliff.
Yeah.
I mean, the way that I think about her signature style is that she, first of all, she thought of gardening as the most democratic form of the arts.
Mm.
But she also felt, and she learned this from her time at Cornish, that a garden is enclosed. A landscape is a landscape, but a garden has to have some kind of enclosure, whether that's trees or a low wall or a high wall, because her clients in the 1920s and 30s were the wealthy industrial families,
mm-hmm.
and mostly the women of the house who could afford to commission gardens, who wanted privacy, they wanted a place to enjoy their families and friends, and they wanted enclosure. So you see that at Oakland Place. These gardens, there's almost no transition from the house to the garden. They're just like another outdoor room where we live, made of plants and color and texture. But she also had a painterly approach. I mean, she would choose six plants or more, but she would arrange them in these fans of color, almost like a color palette. And she knew exactly what was going to happen from summer to fall to winter to spring.
Mm.
I should say she was inspired by the Colonial Revival movement, but she also got her education from reading garden literature and the magazines that were popular at the time, but also her own self-trained eye. I think she had an inherent eye for color and texture.
Mm-hmm.
Native plants. Mm. You see her using native plants mm-hmm. as well as non-native plants.
Other than Oakland, are there any other residential gardens along the lake or in the city that are still representative of like what she has done?
At Knox Farm, there is a semi-restored garden. It was the vegetable garden, I believe, and cutting garden. But Shipman's gardens for Seymour Knox as well as Marjorie Knox Campbell are still, there are shadows of those gardens.
And of course, we just had a conversation with them about the possibility of that. I mean, this is a project I feel strongly about because Buffalo enjoys a huge garden tourism,
oh my gosh.
You know, right yeah. now. And to have one of the foremost landscape designers and be
yeah.
and be moving forward and pushing forward with revitalizing these. I mean, I can only imagine what this would contribute to. So getting back to
it. It would be interesting just to see that list. The regional list.
They're in the back of her book. Mm-hmm. I can show it to you. I own it. And many of them are privately owned.
Right.
So I don't know the status of them. But certainly the ones that are publicly owned, like Greycliff or SK.
SK, yeah.
Knox Farm. You know, that would be amazing to have those revitalized. Mm-hmm. And if some of the private... You know, we just were discussing the old Kellogg estate out on
right.
out in Derby. That was Shipman's, and that's for yeah. sale now.
Yep.
You know, so wouldn't that be amazing if that was revitalized? So how long did the project on Oakland take to? And you drove that. You actually drove the design.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah.
Yeah. After we all agreed to work on this together. November 2021, we started talking, and then we installed, I did the design work, and we then started the installation in spring of 2022.
What was the most difficult part of that?
What was the easiest part?
No, I like the first question better. Getting the plants. I sourced a lot of the plants in Westchester County at the nurseries, because I wanted to get plants that would, I mean, I use that these nurseries for my own practice, and I wanted to go pick everything out near my, where I live. And then I had to ask our friend David to come with a van, our beloved David, who moves art all over the world.
Yes, David Fine.
David Fine. I said, David, do you move plants? He said, I'll move anything. So,
as long as it's legal.
Yeah, right.
That was really a funny day or two. And then I really need to acknowledge the gardener that has been a longtime gardener for Eric and Steve, and Sarah Stevens.
Sarah Stevens, yes, she's wonderful.
Buffalo City Gardens had already been, had done enormous amount of work to pull that garden up from the ashes. And so she was the one that really helped me and worked alongside of me when we had the plan. Some of the plants we did buy here, but that was really an exciting part of it, was identifying.
And that plan, how detailed is the plan like that? I mean, is it right down to, like, I mean, just having a complete...
It's this. I'm showing Newell the plan, or part of the plan.
Yeah, we can put that in an image as well.
So I mean, that's pretty specific. It's not down to, I mean, it's certainly showing some of the design and the plant selection, but it's not down to the very level of specificity. So
this is a schematic sketch. There was an initial sketch to show my clients because they also expressed their own personal tastes and personal desires for how they use this. This is a home, and with any client, you have to incorporate how is this going to be used, and also what are the plants that are going to survive today. We can't really use a lot of the plants that Shipman specified because they just don't hold up. And she also planted.
Well, I would imagine there's obviously, like, these days, access to a lot more.
Absolutely.
It was probably limited back then.
I'm interested in the design you're showing us because it is quite formal.
Yes.
So it has quadrants. Mm-hmm. So she balanced formality and informality.
Absolutely. That's the key to her.
Yeah. How interesting.
Now, how did she do that? Okay, if you really look at this design plan, which we'll post, it's asymmetrical. See how this is longer than this? Mm-hmm. This notch is over here. This notch is over here. She used these fun notches. I like to use the word belted the bed with stone. But
surrounded it with stone.
Surrounded this with stone, enclosed it with stone. But then inside they were heavily planted. Almost too much for any gardener to maintain. That was part of her hallmark too.
So a question for you. As we're in, you know, embarking in Western New York is embarking on hopefully resuscitating more of her projects here.
Yeah.
Is this something is she gaining more recognition on the East Coast, and are there similar efforts happening
Yeah, around the country for sure. In New Orleans, there's Longview, which was the garden for the Stern family. It was one of her most ambitious projects. In Akron, Ohio, there's Stan Hewitt, the Sieberling property. There's a couple private commissions, restoration, revitalizations that Janice Parker, the landscape architect in Connecticut and Greenwich, has done. Janice Parker is really known for her refined interpretation and revitalization of Shipman's work. Duke University has a Shipman garden, and there's some work being done there. So there are places throughout the Northeast and the rest of the country where there have been revitalizations I know I'm not telling you about all of them because I can't no. even remember.
No, that's why. No, I'm just curious about the movement and the yeah. increased awareness and appreciation for her.
Yeah.
So, you know, per this podcast and the focus on it, and I think we've already covered a number of subject, you know, topics that could be constituted as such. But is there a who knew about Shipman and her relationship to yeah. Buffalo? Is there a factoid you'd like to impart on our audience?
Yeah, I want to talk about the Central Train Terminal for a minute on the east side.
Sure, which is undergoing a $60 million. Plus, they just announced I think it's now up to $300 million plan to redevelop it, which is super exciting.
Super exciting. When we think about how did she get around in 1928-29, she took the train from Grand Central Station to Central Terminal in mm-hmm. Buffalo, mm. you know, carrying her valise. I love that word, valise.
As one does.
As one yes. does. On the train. Think about the African-American Pullman porters that made those rides so elegant and so comfortable. And after she visits Isabel and Darwin Martin at the eve of the stock market crash, and they still want to go forward with having her work with them, she calls for Olmsted's original plan. He sends it to her in Buffalo. So she's going back and forth on the train. Wouldn't that have been a wonderful place to settle your mind and your thoughts and do initial sure. sketches? Yep. I'm not sure that that's actually right. where she did the work, but... If it were me, that's where I would yeah. be, like, working out the problems of such a design. And just one last thing, you know, her specialization, especially as a self-taught female landscape architect of this part of our history, really had to make friends with her clients. She accepted commissions to revitalize other landscape architects' work and work together and revise. She didn't have pride about that. She had to run a business. It was an all-woman staffed office that she maintained until she closed the office in 1946. So I think that we hear a lot about her clients falling in love with her and really just being friends, and she would go back and check on their gardens twice a year, even if she wasn't retaining a fee.
There was no one there to keep that moving forward, or?
There were gardeners that were hired by the individual clients that she often, you know, recommended to take care of these plant-heavy gardens. But
she closed her business, and that was...
Yeah.
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 Well, really, really fascinating, Rebecca. I'm so, so grateful for you being in town and stopping by and meeting with Newell and me and sharing more information on. She's a truly fascinating figure, Ellen Shipman, and I look forward to seeing more projects in Buffalo, and let's hoping we can revitalize more of them. So all the best to you. Thank you, Rebecca.
Thank you.